Welcome to this episode, and finally, here comes the next one in English. I'm Kerstin Thürmer. Welcome to Sports and Business. Today, I'm very happy to talk about one of the most important topics when it comes to training, recovery, health, our memory, and much more. There is a lot to talk about: sleep. My guest is a leading sleep scientist with a PhD in cognitive psychology. He has been in sleep research for the past 15 years, and he never stops looking for the next sleep improvement technology. He is the creator of an app as well as the smart bed. His TED Talk, The Brain Benefits of Deep Sleep and How to Get More of It, has around 5 million views. And I'm very happy to have him on my show today. Welcome the founder and CEO of Sleep Space, Dr. Dan Gartenberg.
Thanks for having me. Excited to chat with you.
Thanks a lot, Dan. Thank you for being here. How many hours of sleep did you get last night?
Oh, I could actually look on my app. I can't remember off the top of my head. Let's see what it says. I actually used the smart bed last night. So I only got 6 hours and 31 minutes, which is a little less than I should have probably.
And we'll talk about the length for sure, because that's one of the topics I'm really interested in, and probably most listeners as well. So you and your team have received more than $3 million in grant awards to continue your work. Do you believe that the importance of good sleep has finally arrived in people's heads?
No, yeah. I mean, the zeitgeist around this has definitely been shifting. You know, there's so much talk about diet and exercise in the 90s and the zeros. And I think the 2020s, like, sleep is going to be the thing. And it really is the pillar of health, because you're going to have a better workout. You're going to eat less fatty foods when you've slept enough. And it's linked to every chronic health disease. I study the links between sleep and Alzheimer's disease. So people are waking up to this fact and prioritizing their sleep more.
That's great. And listeners know that I love this topic. I give it a lot of priority for sure. What do you say when people tell you that they do not need much sleep? Are there really people who are fine and stay healthy with less hours than others?
Yeah, I mean, there is a lot of variability. There's a consensus report that from a group of scientists that adults need between 7 and 9 hours of sleep every night. So I got a little less than that last night. Partly it was because we took a nap in the afternoon, and I my homeostatic sleep need was a little bit reduced, because you can actually take naps in anticipation of maybe being sleep deprived, and it makes you need less sleep later on, basically. And so that's 7 to 9 hours of actual sleep. That's not time in bed. So, you know, I was in bed for more like 7 hours and 30 minutes in order to get that, 6.5 hours that I got. But we think about it over a 24-hour period. So I took a 30-minute nap yesterday. So it was really, I did get 7 hours. Some people, as you mentioned, claim they can get by on like five. And essentially, that's impossible. It's maybe like 0.001% of the population. A lot of people think that's them, but it's basically never them.
So is there a general statement how many hours of sleep are sufficient?
7 to 9.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, we know that we sleep in circles of 90 minutes. So does it make sense to always stick to these 90 minutes, which is to wake up either after 7.5 or then after 9, or is also 8 hours okay?
Yeah, so it's actually there's the 90 minute thing, but when you look at someone's brain waves, you'll actually see that their sleep is not consistent at 90 minutes. It'll shift around much more than that. From night to night, your sleep cycles are pretty consistent, but there's nothing really that special about 90 minutes. That's just sort of an estimate. One thing you can do is wake up naturally and track how much sleep you're getting. And that amount is probably the right sleep cycle to the right time to wake up in a lighter stage of sleep. So like, for example, if I naturally wake up always after 7 hours and 20 minutes, since my sleep cycles are pretty consistent from night to night, it's likely that I'm waking up in a lighter sleep cycle after 7 hours, 20 minutes.
So if I have a job to do or any appointments in the morning hours, would you recommend, if I need an alarm clock, is it better to use these wake up lights or any other technology?
Yeah, so my theory on this, and I think a lot of people would agree, that the right way to wake up is gradually. You know, to wake up with some blaring alarm clock, it'll unnecessarily raise your cortisol. And we have this thing in the called a cortisol awakening response in the morning, where your body naturally produces, you know, this stress hormone. It's actually healthy to some degree to get this spike of cortisol in the morning. It's not healthy when you're chronically stressed, and that actually results in you not getting this spike. So our theory is the right way to wake up is gradually. And what that'll allow you to do is also wake up in a lighter stage of sleep and get a little extra sleep when you need it. So for example, we'll gradually ramp up bird sounds, or ramp up like 528 hertz, which is a relaxing frequency. And if you're really sleep deprived, it might take like 10 minutes for that to wake you up. But if you're not sleep deprived, it'll be like more like 3 minutes. And then we'll integrate with these things called LifeX bulbs too, which are smart lights. So you can set it so your lights ramp up in the morning like that too.
Then where does your passion for this topic come from? What's your personal story of how you've become a sleep expert?
Yeah, so I think it was a combination of personal issues. I was always a ruminator at night. And I think in high school, I probably suffered from this thing called delayed sleep phase syndrome. Basically, a lot of high schoolers have this problem because in the States, at least, the school start time is really early. And for teenagers, that's bad for their circadian rhythms. There's actually a really good TED Talk about this. Wendy Trexel gives this. About how they should actually flip the school start times, where teenagers are naturally more night owls. Your circadian rhythm shifts when you're a teenager for a couple reasons. And so the teenagers should usually go to school later, and the younger kids should go to school earlier. However, in the States, at least, that's not the case. And then if you go out late on the weekends, it basically throws off your circadian rhythm. And you can have a really hard time falling asleep. And this is called delayed sleep phase syndrome. And then, you know, I just sort of saw that besides breathing, it's the behavior we do the most of. So if you could enhance it in some way, it would have a dramatic impact on health and wellness. And I'm really interested in moving away from this illness model of health and into this, you know, wellness longevity model. And so I started delving into the science. And I discovered this deep sleep stimulation effect that was very interesting to me. And it aligned with my research focus on transcranial direct current stimulation and some work for the Air Force that I was doing modeling fatigue. And I just sort of started applying for these grants. And, you know, we've showed that basically by playing certain sounds throughout the night, we can increase these regenerative delta waves. And I've been focusing on that problem for some time.
Among the many, many topics we can discuss today, which one is your favorite field currently when it comes to sleep science?
I mean, I guess a lot of my current work is around insomnia. Mm-hmm. So creating digital solutions for insomnia, partly because it's sort of the biggest problem. You know, in the States, more than 30 million people have it. Yet the solution in medicine is often to give a sleeping pill. Yet what scientists suggest is that our thoughts, feelings, and behaviors are the main causal link for this problem. So I'm always trying to come up with how we can address something like insomnia at the root of the behavior with new technology. And so our grant research is around creating this new digital treatment for insomnia.
We'll definitely talk about technology also. So yeah, before we come to that, you talk a lot about the impact of sleep and the lack thereof on our brain. Can you explain this correlation?
The impact of sleep on our brain?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so I mean, it helps us process our reality. And there's a theory called the synaptic homeostasis hypothesis, where basically our neural activations increase throughout the day. And we actually build up metabolic waste in our brains throughout the day as well. And then what sleep does is it down-regulates all of the activations throughout the day, such that the relevant things to our survival rise to the top. And there's this process, there's this glymphatic cleansing system in our brains, where basically it pumps out these plaques that can form. And this happens in deep sleep. So in deep sleep, you're down-regulating and you're cleansing out your brain. It's also related to human growth hormone and these beneficial things. And then in REM sleep, you're replaying and integrating that information to your long-term memory and personality. And there's a lot of studies that show when you inhibit REM, when you inhibit deep sleep, you don't remember things that happened and you do worse on cognitive assessments the next day. But it also impacts our emotions. You know, it impacts, it even impacts sense of humor, where if you're sleep deprived, you have a worse sense of humor. So it basically impacts, you know, everything physical that you can think of, essentially, and a lot of the mental things as well. And so that's why, you know, I take it really seriously.
Where could I start when I'd like to improve my sleep as such? Do you have a few basics everyone could start doing?
Yeah. And we have a couple free guides on, you know, things for falling asleep and staying asleep, and then things for getting deeper sleep. Part of knowing what you should do is knowing what type of sleeper you are, and then following the guide based on that. So if you're like a biohacker or like an athlete who's trying to optimize their sleep, there's one set of suggestions. Whereas if you're someone who has problems falling asleep and staying asleep, there's another set of suggestions. So for example, a power nap during your circadian dip might be a really good solution for the biohacker, for the person that wants to get more deep sleep and have more energy throughout the day. Whereas if you have problems falling asleep and staying asleep, you should never take a nap. So that's just one example where knowing what type of sleeper you are is important. But the general takeaways are consistency of bedtime, wake time. There's something called Zeitgebers, which is a German word, actually. You probably are familiar with time giver. And so there's these external cues that dictate our circadian rhythm. And so having a strong circadian rhythm is essential for everyone. So being consistent with the timing of light exposure, meals, energy exposure, these are external Zeitgebers that strengthen your circadian rhythm. And then also having a wind down process at night. Those are things that everyone can be consistent with that will naturally improve your sleep quality.
You mentioned food, let's talk about what should I avoid, maybe certain foods or certain times when I shouldn't eat anymore. Is there a general statement? What should I pay attention to?
Yeah, I mean, not having these big, heavy meals, sometimes with the intermittent fasting folks, you can overload the system at night, for example, if you're doing a fast where you're not eating in the morning. And that having a huge meal at night can be problematic for your sleep, essentially. And if you are, you know, doing some kind of intermittent fasting, I usually recommend doing, you know, 3 square meals a day. Because it's like, just I think intermittent fasting can be beneficial. But for certain situations and types of people. But there are things to consider when you're doing it. And so, for example, if you are not consuming energy in the morning, it's probably better to not work out in the morning. You basically want to align your energy expenditure with your energy intake. So you want those things to be occurring at the same time. Not having like a big sugary meal towards in the dinner time is, you know, going to be problematic. And if you have acid reflux, for example, certain foods at night could be bad. There's actually a side that you can sleep on that reduces the acid reflux. And so that's something else to consider, is like sleep position. And it's based on like where our organs are located. But multiple research studies have essentially found that sleeping on your left side is better if you have acid reflux. Another small hack there.
Interesting. How about training and workout later towards the evening? Is that also a general statement to avoid that?
No, I mean, it can be fine. And there's some new research. They used to say don't work out 2 hours before bedtime. But new research has actually showed that it could even be like an hour before bedtime, and it's not much of a problem. You know, basically, there's a whole interaction with raising your body temperature. And so that is thought to maybe impact things. But, you know, the best times to work out are essentially 2 hours after you wake up for the best output. You know, working out right when you wake up is perfectly fine too. But you have a peak in alertness 2 hours after you wake up. And then right before dinner time, essentially, is another peak. So that could be a good window to work out at as well.
So would that have a positive impact on the hormone status in my body also?
Yeah, so it would give the right cue, the right Zeitgeber for your circadian rhythm to help you fall asleep later. And, you know, exercise is one of the things that's really shown to improve your deep sleep. Raising body temperature throughout the day. You can hack it also with sauna.
Interesting. Whenever I'm wearing my sports watch during the night, it does track my sleep. So I'm getting nice data in the morning, which is interesting. But how can I improve my sleep quality? Do you have any top three tips and tricks?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the main things we do is we measure your sleep in real time, which is sort of a rare thing amongst a lot of trackers. And then we'll adjust sound in order to deepen sleep. So basically every 30 seconds, we'll measure what sleep stage you're in and then play a sound that blocks out noise pollution and also plays this regenerative delta wave. So you might be surprised, even like your air conditioning turning on can wake up your brain at night, even if you're not consciously aware of it. So effectively blocking out noises with a pink noise machine and one that's adaptive, for example, is something that is a simple hack to improve sleep. You know, getting the sunlight in the morning and starting that circadian rhythm off right is another really essential hack. And if you live in a climate that doesn't have that, I would highly recommend getting like a happy lamp and exposing yourself to like 10,000 lux of light. And then really having a wind down ritual. So, you know, we have this ritual where all of our lights turn red. And then ocean waves play just to sort of get our mind in the right state. And you can even meditate to these ocean waves and then get in this prime, this relaxing state and have them replay when throughout the night to sort of make sure that you are relaxed throughout the night. Because like watching some, you know, scary movie or something will naturally help result in you waking up throughout the middle of the night from like a bad dream, for example. So what you do before sleep has a strong impact on how you process information in this very active thing called sleep that happens, you know, every single day.
Yeah, you kind of already responded to my next question about how to wind down, because there are these nights when I continuously dream about my job and work, not necessarily in a bad way, but I'm constantly in meetings all night long while dreaming. So this tells me that I'm not in deep sleep, obviously. So is that what you just Yeah, describe.
Well, I mean, just because you're remembering your dreams, I don't know if that necessarily means that you're not in deep sleep. I would probably say that that's good. So when we're in deep sleep, you're right that it's not, you don't remember, you're not dreaming really in deep sleep in the way that you would like remember your dreams. Your brain is functioning very differently, but deep sleep and REM are usually tied together. So usually the more deep sleep you're getting, also the more REM you're getting. So both are good. And if you're remembering your dreams, I would say that's probably a good thing. If you're waking up from the dream because it's stressful, I would say maybe that's not so great. You know, your work is essential to your survival, and sleep is essentially helping you survive better by ingraining the things relevant to your survival. And for you and many people, that's what happens at work. So I think that that's, you know, not necessarily a bad thing, but if it's waking you up and you're stressed from it, then maybe you're teetering on trying to separate life from work, which is a problem that many people have.
So deep sleep, as I understand it, is what we are aiming for. Can you say how many hours of deep sleep are required for our mental health or health in general?
Yeah, so basically I would say deep sleep and REM. So usually you want more of both. And unfortunately, as you age, many people get less deep sleep. So a lot of scientists have been focusing on ways to improve deep sleep because it's thought to be related to Alzheimer's disease and related dementia. A really healthy amount of deep sleep and REM is probably 2 hours each. If someone has that, I would call it super healthy. Some of these trackers sometimes say like you got like 3 hours of deep sleep, for example. Usually I think those are probably wrong. And actually Oura just updated their algorithm. And I think their algorithm in the past was linked to heart rate variability. So if you were super healthy and had a low heart rate, it would overestimate how much deep sleep you got. But, you know, for a young, you know, someone in their 30s, for example, in their 20s, you know, 2 hours of deep sleep and REM, I would say are really good. And you can maintain that as you get older. Actually learning something new and being exposed to new environments is another hack that you can do to get more deep sleep, like picking up a new instrument, for example, or learning a new language. Because when we are exposed to new environments, our body responds with this regenerative deep sleep and REM.
Would that possibly also work when learning a new sport, like new movements?
Yeah. No, for sure. Like dance, for example, there's a lot of studies showing that that's one of the best treatments actually for Alzheimer's disease. Actually, there's a social component to some of this stuff too, which is also beneficial.
So all those people who cannot sleep or report that they do not sleep well or can't sleep without interruptions, which could be possible reasons and what could that person do?
Yeah. You know, so a lot, if someone can't sleep, there's a model for this called the three process model. So there's basically, natural states that you have. So it's predisposing is these, you know, if you have a worrisome thought style, some people just naturally have more tense muscles, for example. And they're just sort of born this way. So you have these predisposing factors that make you more likely to like ruminate throughout the night, for example. And then a lot of times something stressful happens. It's the three process model. I always forget the second P. Let me just hold on a second. So there's predisposing, precipitating, and perpetuating. So precipitating factors are like, you know, your parent dies, something stressful happens at work. a lot of times you have this stressful event that happens that sort of pushes you over the edge, and you have a small bout of insomnia. And that's very, very common because, you know, bad things happen and you get stressed out about it. And now what often happens then is you have something called perpetuating factors, where you start forming habits around not being able to fall asleep, such as staying awake for a long time in bed. And you start associating your bed with not being able to fall asleep. And you start getting these worrisome thoughts around it, like you can't fall asleep, you're not able to do it. And so these are perpetuating factors that keep you awake and make the issue more chronic, essentially. So to address this, usually a lot of times we're trying to address the perpetuating factors because that's what we can control. And counterintuitively, one of the main successful treatments for someone with insomnia is actually to restrict the time in bed. It's a little bit counterintuitive, and you should do this with a psychologist. But essentially, a lot of times when people can't fall asleep or stay asleep, they think, oh my God, I need to spend 10 hours in bed to get the sleep that I need. But what that does is it actually does the opposite thing of what we want folks to do, because we want people to associate their bed with sleep and only go to bed when tired, because it results in them spending a lot of time awake in bed, and they build this negative association with their bedroom and sleeping. So if you're having problems falling asleep and staying asleep, instead of going to bed earlier, if anything, you should push the bedtime back later.
So let's talk a little bit, Dan, about your app Sleep Space, how that works and what I can get out of that. And I understand that there's a free trial also available for all the listeners. So how does that work?
Yeah, so everyone can try it out for free for 30 days if you do sleepspace.com/union, because we're trying to, you know, give it away for free and only charge you when you like it. It has a bunch of relaxations in there, you know, yoga nidra, which is a really good thing for relaxing, sleep stories, passive muscle relaxation, which is a lot of scientific validity to it. And so we have these wind down experiences, and then we have something called a sleep journey that plays the sounds to increase your deep sleep, and then a smart alarm clock that wakes you up in the morning. And we have 24/7 support by a Dr. Snooze AI, which also integrates with our coaching services to basically address almost any sleep issue that you might have, whether you're an athlete, someone has problems falling asleep, a biohacker who just wants to get more deep sleep. We have customized solutions for all of those things. We can measure your unique circadian rhythm, give you feedback on that, and then also integrate with various wearables. And then if you don't have a wearable, you can either place the phone in your bed and it'll measure your sleep, or integrate with, and it'll work all offline too. So if you're concerned about like EMFs and stuff. And then we have this mechanism, it's just a phone charger that puts the phone in the same bed at the same place every night, and then measures micro motions through the mattress and allows us to precisely play sounds to you.
So that works in offline mode, you said. I'm turning off my Wi-Fi during nighttime because I think this could harm. Is it true? Is it better to turn off any electronic devices?
Yeah, I mean, some people go that far. I just usually put my phone in airplane mode. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've tested the like EMFs and stuff when basically if you have a distance from an object, EMFs basically reduce exponentially by distance. And so, you know, I make sure it works in offline mode for the concern that you mentioned. I haven't seen the research to convince me strongly one way or another how much effect it really has.
I have another question, which is important for those people who don't sleep according to normal rhythms, like shift workers and even travelers between time zones. Do you have any recommendation to those people?
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest things and the biggest benefits that I've taken from all of my research in this is the power of light exposure. So you should definitely have like blackout blinds if you're in that situation, and also a happy lamp, and, you know, have the, create the right light environment for your unique rhythm. And melatonin also plays a major role in, you know, this whole light system is the same system that melatonin functions on. So there's a timing of melatonin, for example, to address jet lag. Usually, it's recommended to take melatonin like 30 minutes before bed. But for example, if I'm traveling from the States to Europe, and it's different for different situations, you want to actually shift your rhythm earlier. In that case, so there's a use case for taking a small dosage of melatonin actually in the afternoon. So that's just my point that there's an optimum timing for supplements, for example, like melatonin for something like jet lag. And you'd want to talk to a coach to help you navigate what that timing might be based on your flight and stuff like that.
And for shift workers, would you recommend that they adjust their rhythm? Or, I mean, is it recommendable to eat during the night where the body would rather sleep?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of specific to the situation, like what the actual shift work schedule is. And we have a coach on our team that specializes in this. So sometimes you want to get on that late schedule, but other people want to see their family, and there's a big cost socially to being a shift worker. So sometimes you might want to get away from that shift work schedule to some degree, or prepare for it if it's more, if it's not continuous, for example. I mean, there's a difference if you have to do shift work once every 2 weeks versus if it's a permanent part of your schedule. And if it's once every 2 weeks, then you take the steps to shift to that schedule from a circadian rhythm perspective and then shift out of it afterwards.
Right. Then I'm wondering, what is the impact when we drink coffee or other beverages to fight against tiredness? I'm hearing so many rules, like don't drink any coffee after 2 p.m. and then you won't sleep well at night. Is there anything you have learned so far?
Yeah, I mean, generally, I try to stop after 2 p.m. Sometimes I'm not completely successful in that. It's just caffeine has a pretty strong half-life. It's largely impacted by your metabolism and how addicted you are to it as well. But even if you don't have problems falling asleep, there's been some research showing that since it has such a long half-life, it stays in your system and makes your sleep not as deep. So a good hack is to switch to, I mean, I love the ritual of coffee, and it is good. I mean, it has antioxidants in it, and it's good to take it in the morning. Usually it's most effective if you take it like a half hour after you wake up. And it'll help you rev up in the morning, especially if you're a little bit groggy and you want to rev up in the morning. So there's a real use case for it. But some hacks around getting the most out of it include switching to, you know, chamomile tea in the afternoon, so you still get the ritual of it, or to make yourself less addicted to it such that it has more of an impact. A good hack that we have is we'll switch to decaf randomly every month, basically. And that'll bring down your tolerance for it such that it's more effective and you need less. But, you know, amping up on, you know, 4 cups of coffee oftentimes is probably counterproductive.
Well, initially you mentioned that you had a nap yesterday. So is there a general statement whether naps during the day could be good for me?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you don't have problems falling asleep and staying asleep, they're a really powerful tool. And, you know, I think they're good for cognition. Even like there's some studies showing even a 5-minute nap can help with workouts and your cognition. And there's famous anecdotes about how, like, I think it was Edison would use naps to help himself ideate, for example. you can oftentimes solve problems through your subconscious processing that happens during naps. And that's something I'm really interested in, is how do we touch our consciousness? And there's actually something called targeted memory reactivation during sleep, where we could basically create these associations with stimuli throughout the day and then replay the stimuli while we're sleeping to prime that cognitive state. So you could essentially inception yourself to solve problems that you want to solve while you're napping. And I think that's sort of the future of sleep.
So Dan, my subtitle here is top performance. What does it mean for you personally?
Yeah, I mean, personally for me, I'm not like a professional athlete, but I would call myself a professional thinker. So I'm always trying to improve my productivity and solve problems more effectively. And sleep helps with both of those things. And a lot of this is, you know, if you have like a big deadline, like, you know, a grant, for me, it's like a grant deadline, I will anticipate that and create a schedule for myself that for these events that I have to function in high performance mode, essentially, and then also ramp out of those modes using the tool of sleep. You know, if you're in like a high performance mode, sometimes you get a little bit sort of, you need less sleep because you get more manic and hypervigilant, essentially. And then the trick is to ramp out of, and that's sort of natural, you know. There's a stigma against it to some degree, but, you know, sleep functions as this homeostasis of our cognitive states. So to ramp out of that is essential to get more sleep after you're in this, you know, more anxious, high performance state. And so it's really a tool for optimum performance.
There's so much to talk about, really, on that fascinating topic, Dan. Where can people find you and get in touch with you and read so much more?
Yeah, so just check out my website. All the information is there. We have a bunch of free resources. And again, if you can try out the tech if you do sleepspace.com/union.
So thank you so much for our interview today and for your openness to share so much of your knowledge with all the listeners. Let me ask you the last question for today. What is the one thing or routine which supports you every day to be in your best energy?
Yeah, I mean, I would say probably the wind down ritual. 30 minutes before bed, we have this really relaxing ritual, and it gets us, and it might be different for different people. And so I'm always trying to find that one thing. And this is what I'll leave your listeners with. There's usually one thing that you can do that can improve your sleep the most tonight. And what that thing is for me is like constantly changing. And so it's very personalized. You know, recently for me, it was actually identifying that I'm allergic to dust mites and then getting these special pillows that pillowcases to address that, because I was snoring as because of my allergy to dust mites. And so, you know, it changes too as you age. So what is the thing that you think is most affecting your sleep, and what can you do to address that?